Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hello and welcome to The Ruck. We are now a rugby podcast without big live rugby to talk about. These are strange and exceedingly anxious times, and Lord, do we hope that you at home or wherever you are all well and not too thrown by the direction in which our world has suddenly turned. The good news is that we are still here, kind of. This is our version of Keep Calm and Carry On, still talking our usual brand of rugby and occasional nonsense. I'm Owen Slott. Barnsley is off counting his losses from a week at Cheltenham. Alex Lowe is in his stats lair, rewinding the Six Nations and putting the stopwatch on how long it takes Eddie Jones to open his mouth and say the wrong thing. If you don't know what I'm talking about there, can I refer you to last Friday's Times? Alex did a brilliant piece on Owen Farrell, the slowest place kicker in the Six Nations, and how he went over the 60-second allowance for all 10 of his penalties in the tournament. Really good stuff, boffin brilliance from Alex. So that's Barnsley and Alex. And as is the modern way, we have Lawrence and Jonesy here joining us remotely. Hello, Lawrence.
Hello, guys.
You're piped in via Skype from Richmond, are you?
I'm piped in over the internet via Richmond. I thought it would be best to stay here. And you're holding the chair at News Towers.
The sports desk is entirely working remotely today, so the absolutely the wrong thing is to call yourself a trooper, because everyone should be doing that if they possibly can. Jonesy, you're piped in as well. Well done.
Yeah, I'm speaking to you from the Royal Borough of Windsor and Maidenhead, Slotty. Incidentally, a lot of people see you as a remote figure, but
increasingly
that was before the virus.
And what now? Just vanished altogether.
No, well, I love you anyway. And anyone who says, is that Slotty as weird as people think? I say, no, he's a really nice guy.
I mean, he's an award-winning remote figure.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Well, the judges have got it wrong the last 2 years, but I'll be back, as General MacArthur said.
I think I will return.
I
hate to say it, Jones, but 3 years was the word you were looking for there. But that's it's
oh,
not.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Owen, I don't know. What's that? That noise I can hear of yourself patting yourself on the back yet again.
I'm not joining you in the ski slopes this week, anyway. I've been rejected by all skiing podcasts. Well, actually, as you probably know, pretty much every ski resort is shut down now. Lawrence, you won't.
No, I don't know that, because I've never been to a ski resort. So how would I know?
Well, you might read the papers.
No, I don't.
That's no bad thing. A ski resort without skiing is no bad thing.
Yeah, so Lawrence, you can't go and visit your chateau in the Alps, then?
No. We're firmly in lockdown here. The world is crazy at the moment, and that's all you can say. And I'm not quite sure about the approach being adopted, but if it carries on, I'm not sure it's going to be terribly sustainable. Never mind sport. I think there'll be a lot of people out of business and out of pocket.
Yeah, have you been battling in the aisles of the Richmond Waitrose? Because apparently that there's fist fights over the last bottle of Chablis in there.
Oh, well, I tell you what, it's no laughing matter. I didn't think it was terribly serious until I went shopping yesterday, and Yeah, the shelves are cleared out, aren't they? To be honest with you, it's crazy.
It is crazy, and it is the case. I think the best email I got, or the best communication I got an email from the chief executive of Sainsbury's yesterday. I suspect that it wasn't just only me he was writing to, but just basically saying, "Hey, listen, guys, there's enough for everyone to go round if you're prepared to share it, so and not be stupid." So there you go. I don't know if anyone else got written to by the Sainsbury's chief exec.
No one's listening, are they? That's for sure. No one's sharing because the shelves are absolutely decimated yesterday, and I'm sure that was the same all around the country.
Yeah, well, maybe after listening to the ruck, the whole world will sort of get its act together and start behaving sensibly. So, gents, I didn't get to see any live sport over the weekend. Lawrence, did you?
No, I didn't, actually. There was murmurs of some rugby league still being played, which was, a bit staggering, really. But no, not much live sport at all. And there must be a lot of very tidy houses at the moment.
Oh, I haven't got round to that yet. I'm still postponing it. Jonesy, you did see some live sport, though, didn't you?
I did. I was tasked by our sports desk to find live sport. And I very, very briefly, as I reported on Sunday, we switched from England and Italy in Rome. When that was off, we then switched to Ireland's visit to France. When that was off, we switched from Wales to Scotland. We were all sat there. Car was all full of petrol. And then that was canned as well. I then switched to London Scottish, who were at home. That was canned overnight. I then got my press pass for Ealing Trailfinders, who were at home to Leeds Carnegie. And as I was doing it with Ollie, as I was making the call to get my press pass, Ollie took another call to say that was off too. So I then went to Maidenhead in the big win against Clifton, of which I saw 17 minutes only.
Oh, go on. Explain why you saw 17 minutes and no more.
Well, the Maidenhead captain and scrum half and fly half, who'd already scored a few points and a couple of kicks, I had to take him to hospital because he took a very nasty knock, and he had a compound fracture of his arm and dislocation, and so I had to take him to hospital, and he's now waiting to have an operation.
Christmas. Why did you have to take him to hospital, you particularly?
Well, A, because I'm like that, and B, because it was my son, who was the Maidenhead captain. And also, I wanted to interview him for the post-match quote, so I had to stay with him. You know, joking apart, it is a really bizarre time, and you know, people are just combobulated, and you know, like Lawrence, I found myself thinking, blimey, I'm now reduced to watching rugby league. Oh, sorry, with respect to the games I saw, but it is a very, very odd time, and people are, whether it's in their rugby guise or out of it, are anxious, and people don't know what's going to happen, and people would love it all to be restored quickly, but I think they're also now realizing it won't be. So there's big questions for rugby, big problems. But also I think rugby's Freemasonry, rugby's friendships and the sort of tolerance and the sort of let's all be there for each other that rugby's always had, I think that'll probably stand us all in good stead in and out of sport in the next few months.
Absolutely. Best wishes to young Duncan Jonesy.
Thank you.
I hope he recovers fast. Wanted to ask you two, the end of last week was a really crazy time in this sort of coronavirus era when there was this hysteria for cancellations and this game can't go ahead, and Cheltenham did go ahead, Wales-Scotland was going ahead. Wales-Scotland was still, they made a statement on the Friday morning saying this game's still going ahead, and then in the afternoon they said, sorry, it's not going ahead anymore. There was never any government advice for anyone to cancel any of these. Did you feel that was a slight sort of sense of herd hysteria, if you like, or did you feel that people were making sensible decisions that the government should have made anyway? I don't know. I struggle slightly with this whole conversation because we're sports professionals, or I say that inverted commas because I know that you two will say the opposite to me. But anyway, I slightly struggle with this because I'm not sure to what extent we're qualified to comment. But I just found that a really weird time. Lawrence, what did you make of it?
Well, I think the one thing we have to remind ourselves is that there are, unfortunately, people dying of this disease and this virus, which, puts our conversation into perspective somewhat. But, you know, clearly the messaging is very inconsistent. I mean, the thing I think I'd like to see banned most of all is social media, really, because
I think it's created a
world of hysteria, and I'm not underplaying what we're dealing with here, but there's a lot of people who, for whatever reason, other people listen to, whether it's their fame, their notoriety, their intelligence, their wit. They're making comments about something they know nothing about, and it's created this sort of world of information and misinformation. What we really need is a party political broadcast, live on national television, on the BBC or whatever station you want, where people can get a little bit of consistent direction on what should be done and what shouldn't be done. Because at the moment, you talk to one person and they say one thing, you open one bit of social media, it says something completely different. And the reality is that the sports side of it is normally something in tough and hard times that brings us all together. But we don't even know whether we can enjoy our sport at the moment either. So very, very difficult to know which direction to turn. And I mean, if we feel like that, imagine how some of the very young people feel who look to us for direction, or very old people who look to us for a bit of help. So it's a crazy situation we're in.
Yeah, I think
it is, Lawrence. I totally agree about the social media, because you see something on social media, you think, God, blimey, that's authoritative, and then you think, well, if that's going to be authoritative, I'll just see who the guy is who said that. And you find it's Mr. Joe Bloggs, who hasn't got a single medical qualification to his name.
Yeah, or Mr. S. Barnes or Mr. A. Lowe, those two as well.
Well, exactly. Barnes, he's a trained first aider, but let's put it. But the other thing is, last night 70,000 people saw the Stereophonics at the stadium where Wales and Scotland was meant to play, which I just found absolutely staggering. I found it staggering that Cheltenham went on, but that's because I don't know. And the other thing is, people are now making party political capital out of what the government, the UK government, has said. Well, it's not the government; it's specialists that they have there. So, I think you must be an out and out specialist before you dare to tell anyone what's happening. But the confusion is like the Wales Scotland rugby match was off, and then the night after, Stereophonics played to 70,000. So it really is an unbelievably bizarre time.
Sorry, Jonesy, just to say, but my private fact checker tells me that the Stereophonics didn't play at the Principality Stadium. They played at the Motorpoint Arena, which has got a capacity of about 5,000. But it's still the same sort of thing, isn't it? It's still thousands of people coming into Cardiff, the same city, they're being in far closer contact than a group of rugby fans in an open air stadium. So,
wherever they played, they got absolutely savage for it on the famous free thinking social media. Absolutely savage. You couldn't find one single fan who agreed with them playing. So, I mean, that's partly because of the scare stories, and partly because probably it does seem very, very odd. And I think in the end, the Wales-Scotland game was called off, not because of precise medical advice, but because the Welsh Rugby Union felt incredibly uncomfortable being the only people staging a big game.
Yeah.
It was simple as that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But maybe they would have been the only sensible people to all the. I don't know. This is all going to web into history. All that. I'm just wondering from this stage forward, what do you two think we should be doing with the professional rugby season, the Premiership season, the European season? By the end of today, that those will both have been postponed, or they like to say suspended. They're very keen to give the messaging that this is a temporary hold, but we haven't got a clue how long that's going to be for. Do you think we can try and put plans in place for resumption, and should we accept that some games won't happen? Lawrence, you're right in a club as a director of Wasps. What's your view on that?
Well, I think it's a very tough decision because, as you say, things are changing hourly, daily, weekly. And I don't think whatever scenario we come up with, whatever formula we decide is the right one, there's going to be winners and losers, isn't there? If you extend the season beyond the 21st of June, it has implications for the resumption of next season, or the start of next season, which then has implications on the calendar for next year, which obviously includes a British and Irish Lions tour. I mean, in many ways, the Premiership's in a position where that one thing's already been decided, relegation. So, yeah. I mean, if things were to be null and void and there was no champions this year and one team was relegated, it wouldn't be the end of the world like it would be in previous years. But clearly, all I'm saying is whatever decisions are made, there's going to be some consequences for other people. And, you know, the clubs are obviously financially going to be in a big spot of bother, you know, missing out on a number of games. But rugby's not like any other sport where you can suddenly just play a whole load of fixtures in a short space of time. So clearly for, you know, just talking very mundanely, for every week that goes by without a rugby fixture, I think, you know, the authorities, the governing bodies are in a difficult situation in terms of how they reschedule them.
It's something like £500,000 that each club will lose per home game that they fail to stage. Is that about right?
Yeah, I think that is about right. But I think, you know, what we've got to acknowledge is that, you know, every single sport, and there's some that are way worse off than rugby, is in the same situation. This is not something that's unique to our sport either. You know, you think about the football clubs up and down the land. Think about, you know, all sorts of different clubs that rely on ordinary folk to, you know, day in, day out to pay their bills. Mm.
Jonesy, do you have a sort of a thought on how the season should be tied up, if you like? I mean, for me, it seems that we could now have a season where we don't need semi-finals and Twickenham playoff final. You could, if you're trying to save weekends, you could get rid of two weekends in that respect and have you know, that old-fashioned thing of the person at the top of the table actually winning it. Not quite sure what you do about missing games. Would you just think we just play it by ear because we actually haven't got a clue where we are going to go?
It's a big test for rugby, because what happens is it's like when people are trying to sort out a structured season. You get round the table and then you have the international people with the international interests, European interests and the club interests. Not one of them will budge an inch. And I can bet you that, for instance, the Premiership will say, no, hang on, we understand it's a problem, but we want to have our final. Mm. The Six Nations will say, oh, yes, but we're going to lose a lot of money. First of all, I think, with the greatest respect, they're going to have to forget Europe, because that's one thing that possibly you can get by. There was no European champion this year. I feel terribly sorry for Premiership clubs, all the effort they put in. But, you know, already, you see, there were some internationals called off. And already people are saying, oh, well, of course, don't forget that before next autumn internationals, there's a free week before they start. Oh, no. In other words, suggesting that one of the internationals that's not been played, they play it in the autumn, the week before four internationals, making five in a row. Well, however bad rugby's off, they still got to put welfare before sort of stupidity like that. Well, I mean, I think that in a way, the top two, probably whoever's the top two when the thing is played out as far as it can, could then be allowed without a semi-final to go to the final and just have some sort of end into the season. But very, very difficult. But not everybody can have everything they want, because there is just, as Lowell says, there's just not time. So no Euros. I would actually forget the Six Nations and try and get as much of the Premiership done as I could and start again next season.
Well, one thing that we yet to discover, again, maybe by the end of today we will, is what happens to the community game. So in Wales they stopped all community rugby. I'm still at this stage not convinced, you know, until the government says so, why you can't play community games if everyone's clear and healthy. At some point, we're probably not going to be allowed to go to a cafe or a pub. So that point, we'll stop everything. But while we're muddling through that, and how do you think the community game is going to be affected by it, Steve?
It's going to be very tough. And I mean, I know a lot of people in a lot of clubs. I'm a member of a lot of clubs. And I think that you're at the stage now where there's no other income. You can't say, look, you know, while the games are on, let's all meet up and go to the bar and put money behind the bar. You can't do that either. And I think you're going to get to the stage where clubs are just going to have to appeal to members, local benefactors, local businessmen, to actually sort of send in money just to keep things going and to keep it all ticking over. You know, it's like the old coal mines used to be kept ticking over when no one was there, just so that they'd still be there when everyone came back. And, you know, I know local clubs who are already going to ask for donations. So, you know, these great, great founding venues of our game, our clubs, our rugby clubs, and everyone listening to this will have one. I'm sure that people will be really concerned about their local club and what it means to the local community, to the kids and everything, and to their social lives. Mm-hmm. And just hope some way they all find ways of getting through.
Yeah, you can see just a raft of fundraisers coming towards the end of the season, can't you? Or sorry, the end of the year rather. When if hopefully we're all up and running again.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
There was a lot of other kind of post Six Nations news and noise sort of towards the end of last week as well, particularly on the disciplinary side. Manu Tuilagi got a 4-week ban for his non-tackle on George North. Joe Marler got 10 weeks for whatever it was that he did to Alan Wynne Jones's testicles. I don't get to say that enough here. And then Eddie Jones, who called the referee, insinuated the referee was biased, just got a little tap on the wrist. Lawrence slightly got this all a bit wrong, would you say?
Well, look, I mean, clearly, which bit's wrong? Is the process consistent in terms of disciplinary? You know, I've never felt that there is that much consistency. Don't forget the French tight head got a 3-week ban for throwing effectively a barbed rule right hand. So flush to the nose of the Scotland player. So, you know, is that worth 3 weeks and Joe Marler worth 10? You know, I don't know, really, quite frankly. First of all, let's just deal with the Marler incident. You know, I don't agree in any way with what he did. I saw Stephen wrote a very interesting article in terms of, how you wind players up and, what was acceptable 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago is not acceptable in the modern age. And winding up takes a number of different guises. You know, there's no doubt that a number of Welsh players wound up Carl Sinclair last year down at the Millennium Stadium. And Alan Wynne-Jones was one of them, by the way. But they did it in a way which pushes it right to the law, but not beyond the law. And what Joe Marler did was unacceptable. And he knows that, particularly when you've got a lot of previous in terms of your own disciplinary record. I still don't believe that... that Alan Wynne helped him out at all, and I know Stephen's going to disagree with me, but I think he, to a certain degree, I was surprised by the post-match interview, not surprised by the fact that that he disagreed with what had been done, but when someone as great as Alan Wynne-Jones says something like that, I think it leads the disciplinary into behaving in a certain way, which is why I believe that Joe Marler ended up with 10 weeks as opposed to something a little bit more around the 5 or 6 weeks myself. But there we go.
Steve, do you think that Alan Wynne acquitted himself well? I mean, he certainly hasn't had a decent time of it on social media again, following those comments after the England-Wales game.
First of all, he didn't start the disciplinary procedures. All those people on Sunday newspaper deadlines, had been in touch with World Rugby long before the press conference ever started, just to confirm what the alleged offence was, where it stood in the pantheon. And in fact, I didn't realise there is a specific offence about, you know, molestation with your private parts. And actually, it says in there, regards women's rugby, the breast area, it actually says it categorically. So we knew all that. There was definitely going to be a disciplinary hearing, even if Alan Wynne came in with a mask on and didn't say anything. But you got to remember, at the press conference, I think it was about the eighth time he was asked a question, he admitted it had happened. He kept on saying things like, what are you referring to? Can you be specific? He was perfectly in order to say, well, look, I'm going to leave this to World Rugby, because he didn't want to make his own judgment on it there and then. But, I mean, Manu Tuilagi, 4 weeks was about right. I thought Joe Marlett needed a suspension. I thought 6 weeks would have been better. I thought the French tight end prop, it was about a three-week punch. And the only sentence I totally and utterly disagreed with was Eddie Jones's, because he didn't get one. The others were pretty much the same. The fact that Eddie Jones didn't get anything from the RFU or anybody else offended me greatly.
Can I ask the question of, when we're looking at Eddie Jones particularly, and for that matter, any other director of rugby, world international coach, when they make post-match comments, you know, sensitive comments about winning or losing or drawing a game, whose responsibility, whose jurisdiction does that fall under? Because I'm not so sure it's not a conflict of interest for your own union to give you a rap over the knuckles.
You're completely right there, Lawrence. So when, Geordie Murphy had a go at the officials in Leicester's last game of last season, it was the RFU's own disciplinary procedures which wrapped him over the knuckles and gave him a suspension and a fine and forced him to apologise. So that was the RFU who were the judges. And now when it's Eddie Jones representing England, the RFU suddenly turn into the body that are defending him, and then therefore give a completely different message altogether. Not only do the RFU defend him, but they then put out a press release saying, we've apologised on Eddie's behalf. So Eddie didn't even make an apology. And
the whole thing is very strange, and I just feel, you know, like most things, it needs independent governance, a bit like the salary cap, a bit like a number of other issues, disciplinary. You know, it's not the RFU's job to come out and defend and then to prosecute Eddie Jones. You know, they either do one or the other. And, you know, I'm sure internally there would have been a different conversation with Eddie Jones and the RFU, and he may well have got a slightly different, you know, telling off. But there needs to be, you know, Eddie Jones is not the first international coach to cause a little bit of controversy by his post-match comments, and he won't be the last. And I'm not, you know, it makes rugby analyse itself and realise that the structure is in place and not fit for purpose at the moment.
Yeah, I just think that the RFU should, just because they are upholding all the values of respect and integrity, they needed to have done something on their own behalf. They needed to do just more than say, oh, actually, we don't think Eddie said the right thing there. I just think that was they were running away from their own responsibilities, and it was a dreadful message for the rest of the game.
Yeah, it was the worst media release I've ever seen. Look, let's be fair. We ought to be careful here in the media, because we actually like, well, we like controversy. We like it when people are outspoken. We hate it when people are media managed. But I guess there's a very, very fine balance there, and no doubt we ourselves have exceeded it. But you cannot say the referee is biased. That's absolutely ridiculous. And Lawrence is quite right. It's difficult to know who's sitting in judgment over who. But Bill Sweeney did say at a press conference not that long ago, when he was asked about Eddie's transgressions and, you know, offending Rhys Patchell, offending Johnny Sexton's parents, etc., Bill Sweeney made it clear that he had the right to discipline Eddie and would do should he felt he needed it. And then you've got this wider thing with World Rugby about the game and disrepute charges. So it was still open to World Rugby, but clearly there was a fix, a setup. The fix was in, and World Rugby refused to comment on it. And it seemed to me the RFU had gone to them to say, look, if we put out this release, pathetic though it is, would you please not take any further action? There was a fit up there somewhere.
To wrap this whole thing up, we're now at the stage where, as was made clear at the end of the Six Nations, or at the end of England's last game, that is, that Bill Sweeney, the chief executive of the RFU, is soon to be, maybe this week, I suspect, sitting down with Eddie Jones to actually work out what is his future with England. He's contracted for another year, and clearly someone needs to be put in place to go all the way through to the World Cup. What do you two think about that? Is Eddie's successes with the team, are they good enough to completely override all the rage and the noise that goes with it? Do you just say, listen, that's just part and parcel, and if he gives England success on the field, then live with it?
I wouldn't say live with it. I think the RFU have been somewhat in limbo in terms of their own leadership for the last year and a half. They had Ian Ritchie, followed by Steve Brown, followed by Bill Sweeney, and in the sort of meantime, Eddie Jones has sort of more or less done pretty much what he wants, really. They've obviously recognised the need for a head of communications and a media that has maybe the gravitas to help Eddie Jones to navigate through what is always a big story. England rugby's always big news. So I think whether they appoint Eddie Jones or not is down to performance and various conversations. But there's no reason why they can't put a framework around him to say these are the aspects that we'll take care of, and this is what you're in charge of. And I'm sure Bill Sweeney recognises that and probably will do that.
Steve, do you think that performance is so far the number one, that other part, the noise, that stuff that makes us feel slightly uncomfortable about the way England are represented, does that override all that? If you were Bill Sweeney, would you be pushing the contract under Eddie's nose and saying sign here?
No, I wouldn't. But the thing is, look. However, whatever we think of the way that Eddie Jones behaves, it shouldn't really countermand the fact that you believe if he should still be carrying on. But first of all, let me pick up a point Lawrence says, which I totally agree with. I mean, the last four or five chief executives, they may have been rugby fans, and Bill Sweeney may be a rugby fan, but they are not, categorically not, rugby specialists. And we have this odd thing of sort of independent, the great and good coming in to form ad hoc advisory committees and all that sort of thing. A structure around Eddie, and indeed a structure around the England team, should have been established ages ago, which I would have voted 5 years ago for Lawrence to be in charge of it. Failing that, someone like Martin Johnson, failing that, someone like Sir Clive, where you could set up a structure far-seeing with people who've done it and people who are a bit more than rugby fans, but were epic rugby characters themselves with a lot of knowledge. Then, if you had some inner sort of director of rugby or overall management role, you might have some control over Eddie Jones or whoever's in charge to get him to stop insulting people. You might have got a better coaching group than the one that's just thrown together, with Steve Borthwick as skills coach and Simon Amor, who's a sevens man, in attack, and to plan all that. Because whatever Eddie's done, the appointment of extra coaches and coaches to the main panel is an utter shambles. It's mainly a gang of Australians no one's ever heard of who keep coming over. So the whole thing is a shambles, and Eddie Jones's results, which are reasonable, they're not absolutely brilliant, has slightly got clouded by that. It is a mess.
Lawrence, you wouldn't leave this podcast in order to go and run the England rugby team, would you?
Well, I'm not necessarily qualified to run the England rugby team, but you can. But they've employed Conor O'Shea now, who the RFU, and I'm assuming that Conor will have a significant role in sort of assisting Bill Sweeney in terms of all things high performance. The problem England have got is that those two words, succession planning, have never really been their strong suit. Never have done, and the way it looks at the moment, never will be. When you say, is Eddie Jones going to get a new contract? Well, and one can discuss separately whether the results deserve that. And, his results have been pretty good as far as I can see. But if not Eddie Jones, who are they going to turn to? Because, quite frankly, they've done no succession planning as to the next England coach. So they've, if they don't give Eddie Jones a new deal up until the World Cup, they're going to have to pluck someone out of thin air. Because as far as I can work out, there's not that many people lined up to do the job.
I suppose in terms of, if you're talking about runners and riders or candidates, Warren Gatland could be made available. You could go in that direction. I think if you don't go Warren Gatland, then in terms of availabilities, then I think you're looking at the best of what there is in the English Premiership, and there are certainly some decent candidates there.
Well, no, as far as I was aware, the original contract that Eddie Jones was given was to bring forward a couple of coaches, which, you know, so that by the time they got to this point in time, they might be in a slightly different situation. So that clearly hasn't happened. So I think they've got no choice but to give Eddie Jones a new deal and start succession planning now for what might happen in a few years' time when Eddie does decide that, or the RFU decide it's time to move on.
Owen, the last time, I think what we're saying at the moment is, you know, in a way, I mean, I've seen far better England teams than those who played under Eddie Jones. In win percentages, he's very good, but I've seen far better teams, consistent Grand Slam winners, teams that played better rugby and were more in harmony with the nation, which this team isn't. But, I mean, the last person who got a major coaching job because there was no one else was Mike Bassett, England football manager, in a film. He got that job because no one else was available. And I think, really, at the moment, Eddie Jones's chief recommendation for staying on is that there's not another massive challenger, and that is a great disappointment.
Well, listen, so maybe more on that later this week. Maybe that'll stretch on. We shall see. I just kind of think that we're now in the stage where, I'm sure you both agree, I would like rugby from what is pretty much the sidelines of this world crisis to I think, as you suggested, Jonesy, at the start, to be making the right noises, to be making people feel included, to making people feel happy about where they are in their community, if that's a rugby community, rather than disenfranchised. So that if that's remotely possible, I hope we can go there. We're in for some tough times, and that's sort of where we're going to leave it for this week. Lawrence, some last thoughts until next week?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, for once, I find myself wholeheartedly agreeing with you. I mean,
I'll live with that.
The current climate is going to cripple a lot of businesses and a lot of organisations and sports clubs, rugby clubs. So let's hope a more sensible approach is adopted soon, because, you know, without sounding terribly dramatic, the current world response is in no way sustainable at the moment, and there won't be a lot of businesses left in a few months' time. Rugby, more than ever before, has got to extend its arms around people in the right way, open its doors, and respectfully, 1 meter apart, bring people together.
Yes, absolutely. Jones, you're off to hospital with Jones Jr., are you?
Yes, I am. Then I got my weekly psychiatry appointment after that. I agree with Lawrence, what Lawrence says, but this is a time, you know, in rugby, the last few years have been every day there's been something, blast, blast, blast. We've all been asked for opinions. We've all got opinions. We fall out. The season structure, the way the game's going, the laws, etc. There's just never been any time to sit and think and work them out. Well, maybe this is an opportunity as we're struggling through, for the people in the game in charge to just reflect and then work out, hey, you know, there's no pressure now. There's no pressure. There's no game on Saturday. There's no big game the week after that. Why don't we just reflect and try and be a bit more friendly and try and work out structures and try and work the game out, try and work the laws out. Know that we're no longer under pressure, but also praying for all the people who run rugby at any level. Especially community level, but Premier Rugby clubs too, and provinces. Just pray that they find ways of tiding through, because what we have and what we're missing now is something very, very dear to us.
Absolutely. Well said. Thank you very much, Lawrence. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, everyone who's out there listening. We'll be back next week. Please stay safe, be sensible, stay as healthy as you can, and stay positive as you can. Look after people as much as you can, and thank you for listening.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.